Welcome back to the RBR Recap, episode 27. It is Sunday, August 21st. I'm Alex Burgos, joined as always by my main man, Gabe Rivas. We're back after a brief summer hiatus, little vacation. I personally was turning 40, headed out of the country, was in Peru for a few weeks, did the whole Machu Picchu thing, re-energized, refocused now. I'm feeling good, back. Missed a few fights live, but caught up with some of the stuff that we didn't cover. In terms of Teofimo Lopez, Virgil Ortiz. So there was some good stuff in the weeks that I was gone. But, you know, fear not. We are back. The RBR Recap is here to stay.
I'm doing very well. Happy to have you back, man. Glad you had some rest. Glad you had some fun. And glad that you had a good time out there.
And then I'm back in one piece that I didn't get abducted.
Yeah. It can get scary when you visit those other countries, man. That's something that we Latinos have to deal with when we're traveling home.
100%, man. We love our homelands, but it's like you always got to be careful. But big shout out to all my family and friends that took care of me and made sure I made it back in one piece. I certainly had enough pisco sours for like 2 years. But you can never get enough when you're out there in Peru. So if you haven't visited, make sure you make that that trip. But on to the boxing scene, on to the boxing cards and fights that we had this weekend, man. We had a lot going on. Perfect weekend to come back and cover. We're going to kick it off with Alexander Usyk versus Anthony Joshua, two highly anticipated heavyweight clash and rematch with most of all the belts at heavyweight. So it's a really important fight because even though Tyson Fury has said, you know, oh, I'm retired, he keeps on retiring, unretiring, you know damn well he was an interested spectator. And it's just got to be, the money's got to be right. And, you know, that fight is going to happen for Undisputed, all the titles with his WBC and lineal titles. So Usyk and Joshua had IBF, WBA, WBO, and then the Ring Magazine title on the line. And it was a great fight. I thought it was very entertaining. Usyk won a split decision over Joshua to retain his title. Scores were 115-113 for Usyk, 115-113 for Joshua, and then 116-112 for Usyk. A lot of scores that I saw, you know, in and around social media, kind of commentating people like fighters, this and that. I thought the consensus was pretty clear that Usyk did win the fight. In and around that 116-112. I don't know that 115-113 for Joshua was so popular, but, you know, it was a close fight. It was a good fight. It was ebb and flow. And kind of what we were speaking to a little bit before we started recording, Gabe, was just what Anthony Joshua was able to do in this fight a little bit differently. The fact that he started a little bit late, he was a little bit tentative early on, and then that he showed a better motor towards the end, gas tank, than he did in the first fight. But it was just a little bit too little too late, I think. For me, the rounds 8, 9, and 10 were really important and really interesting because you saw kind of Joshua have his best moments. And then when it looked like Usyk was getting hurt to the body, was really stunned up against the ropes, he brought it all back together. And in round 10 really had his best moments. And then down the stretch was able in the championship rounds was able to close the show. So Gabe, I want to kick it to you. What you thought about this fight, what you thought about Usyk's performance, Joshua's performance, and then talk to me a little bit about also looming now what we have, you know, potentially Tyson Fury versus Alexander Usyk for all the titles.
Going into the fight, there were a lot of interesting variables because Anthony Joshua had hired Robert Garcia to be his trainer. Robert Garcia is known for having an aggressive style, excellent trainer. I think one person that comes to mind is when he was training Marcos Maidana a few years ago, especially ahead of the Jesus Soto Caras fight and ahead of the Mayweather fight. One of the things that stood out for Marcos Maidana's fight is he was already aggressive, but he learned how to jab more with Robert Garcia, if I remember correctly. But he's known to be an aggressive fighter, to aggressive trainer, to teach fighters how to be more aggressive in the ring. And I think that was one interesting variable going into this fight with Anthony Joshua. However, I don't think that we saw him be as aggressive as we hoped we would if you were rooting for Anthony Joshua. I felt he was a little bit too tentative in rounds 1, 2, and 3. Obviously, that's easy for me to say because I'm not in the ring with Usyk. But if you know that aggression wins the fight, if you know that you can't outbox him, you got to start from the very beginning of round one. I take it back to Marcos Maidana versus Adrian Broner. The guy started in round number one. And I take that as an example. It's a different weight class because Robert Garcia was in Maidana's corner. But I think Robert Garcia is a great trainer. But perhaps some of the elements that we need to see, that we needed to have seen from Anthony Joshua that would allow him to win, is something that you're kind of born with. That natural ability to just go out there and throw everything from the first second of the round. Because you need to make Alexander Usyk uncomfortable if you want to beat him, because he's going to be a superior boxer. With Usyk, I think it was excellent performance, like you said, and you saw him dug deep in rounds where he needed to dig deep, like 8, 9, and 10. Joshua was coming forward, but Usyk took it to another level, and that's what you like to see from great fighters, to face adversity in the ring, face a tough version of a previous opponent, and take it to the next level en route to a decision win. So beautiful performance from Usyk. Short, beautiful shots. I mean, even in the early rounds, he was landing his clean jab. Which for me was already a cause of concern if you're Anthony Joshua, because he's cutting the distance really quickly and landing short shots very early. But looking forward, I think everyone knows that the most interesting fight in the heavyweight division is the undisputed championship fight between Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk. Fury, of course, is the WBC champion and the linear champion, or lineal, however you want to say it. He's the man who beat the man. He's the guy who beat Klitschko. You know what I mean? So that would be an interesting fight. Usyk obviously has the rest of the belts. If I remember correctly, there has not been an undisputed heavyweight champ in the four belt era. So this would be a historic fight. And stylistically, I think it'll be interesting. But I think Tyson Fury will have the advantage because it's going to be two boxers. He's going to have the reach, the length, the height, everything. So we'll see how it goes. But hopefully they can make that fight in the near future.
Yeah, and I think Fury has a lot of the same things that, you know, Joshua has, but he just uses it differently. So what a lot of people thought that Anthony Joshua may do is come forward, use his size, use an aggressive style, more so in this second fight against Usyk. And we saw glimpses of it. We saw glimpses of a really good jab early on, but then he kind of fell into, you know, in spots during the middle rounds, back to the old tentative, you know, almost like feinting more and just not applying pressure. And so in some spots later on, we saw, where he imposed his physical ability. And when he was leaning on Usyk, you saw Usyk was uncomfortable. And we know Fury did that to Wilder all day. You know, he's going to lean on you. He's going to weigh on you. He's going to use his size. He knows that style better than anyone at heavyweight right now. So I would definitely give, you know, you can't ever count Usyk out, but you have to give Fury the advantage just on paper, say, you know, how is Usyk really going to deal with that type of pressure, you know, smart pressure from a guy like Tyson Fury. And so it's a little bit disappointing to see Anthony Joshua, the way that he reacted after the fight, I will mention as well. But at the same time, I'm not a big fan of like throwing a mic in front of a guy after such a high level performance when you almost won. You know what I mean? I'm a competitive person, just, you know, playing checkers. I can only imagine at this level, you know, gold medal Olympian, you know, having won the title so many times, you're at the pinnacle, the peak where you almost got your titles back. And then they're like, are you proud of yourself? It's like, fuck no, I'm not proud of myself. I wanted to win. You know what I mean? Don't ask me if, you know, I'm happy with the consolation of just showing up. So I understand it. While I'm not condoning the way that he acted after and all that stuff, I get it. It's tough. Everyone's like wanting you to be gracious and this and that. And it was weird because he was kind of up and down. Like at first he's like, you know, holding the Ukrainian flag with Usyk, but then he kind of blew up. He was like all over the place. So I'm sure a lot of emotions going through his mind and all that stuff, but it would be great to see him continue kind of working with Robert Garcia, because you saw glimpses and maybe some things that he can take from continuing to work with Robert and, you know, maybe reinvent himself after a couple more camps.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, Fury, definitely more versatile than Anthony Joshua. Fury looks like he can pursue two different game plans, stay on the outside, or like we saw in one of the fights with Deontay Wilder, come in heavier and use his weight. And then going back to the Anthony Joshua post-fight stuff, I had to shut it off. Aside from working, the cringe stuff kind of makes me, it makes me cringe. So I shut it off. But yeah, I mean, even from sparring, when people ask me or I'm talking about what I just did, I don't remember every single detail because you're so in the zone, and if you're competitive, you're going to see yourself winning certain exchanges. You know what I mean? You need the time to kind of separate yourself, let the emotions go away, and look at it objectively to be like, oh, okay, maybe I did lose this fight. You know, immediately after, I mean, and also you're getting hit in the head. You're not in the best position to speak articulately about how you, for your performance was when you just got hit by a 200-pound man. So yeah, I'm totally with you on that. But for the broadcast experience, we all want to see, you know, the hot and sweaty post-fight interviews.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I mean, from an interpreter standpoint, you put me out of a job if we don't have that shit anymore. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. No, I feel that. I feel that. I mean, look, why don't we bring judges aren't getting hit in the head, and they're just as important to these fights, and that's referees as well.
Yeah. Why'd you score at that fight? Or why'd you score this round? I mean, we should have questioned, I forgot who it was, but the one who gave you the score in favor of Anthony Joshua.
Right. Because that's what a lot of people were saying. I didn't really see that fight like 115, 113 for Joshua. Like, how did you get there? So I think those are fair questions to ask someone that, while it is a high pressure position to be in to score the fight, you're not getting hit in the head. So, you know, let's be fair to the athletes and to the performers, the ones that are actually in the ring, you know, give them a little bit of slack, I guess, is what I'm saying. But next up, we had a Showtime Premier Boxing Champions card headlined by Omar Figueroa taking on late replacement Sergey Lipinets, as many people would know. And remember, Adrian Broner was supposed to be taking on Figueroa, a fight that's been like on paper and discussed for years now. But he's had some issues, mental health issues, and he backed out of the fight, Broner did. And so Lipinets stepped up. You know, most recently, many people may remember Lipinets losing a one-sided fight to Jerron Ennis, but that was at 147. And so this fight now being down at 140, you knew going in that Lipinets was going to be more comfortable and be more of a challenge. And the sports book saw it. You know, Lipinets was the betting favorite. And Figueroa was really pounded in this fight. It was a one-sided beatdown, and to the point where his father and trainer ended up stopping the fight after round eight. He was dropped, really didn't have an answer. I mean, his solution to trying to win the fight was just from round one, coming forward, trying to get in Lipinets' chest, but Lipinets was comfortable with that. He was able to find his spots, find openings. In Figueroa's kind of weird defense, he goes from southpaw to orthodox and squares up a lot, and it just seemed like Lipinets couldn't miss. And so with a guy that can punch pretty well, it didn't go well for Figueroa early on. And so he announced his retirement after the fight, which I think is a good idea. He's taken some punishment as of late as he's moved up, and we've discussed Adrian Broner in the past and kind of my thoughts on that. I thought if Broner in his career could have stayed more disciplined and stayed at the lower weight classes longer, he could have, you know, imposed his physical dominance and skill and been more dominant throughout his career. But for whatever reason, you know, he moved up really quickly. Figueroa, I think, always had trouble making weight. And that style, when you don't have power, is not going to be conducive to a long standing career. And so you saw it, you know, in his last few fights when he fought guys like Ugas and, you know, now Lipinets, even Abel Ramos, I think. I mean, he just was getting tagged, and what he was bringing to the table in terms of offense just wasn't enough. And so, Gabe, I know you've covered fights, Omar Figueroa fights from back in the day. You know, we've covered him throughout his whole career. And so I want to ask you a little bit about the Lipinets fight, but also just in terms of Figueroa's career, kudos to him. He put on exciting fights, but I think it really is an important kind of factor to look at styles. And, you know, people always are like, oh, you know, that guy's boring, that guy, this and that. Well, when you fight in a way like Omar Figueroa has throughout his career, this is what you get. You get a shorter lifespan. And so, you know, people should appreciate all different styles, because this is kind of what happens. He's not an old guy, but it's just the style. It's too much punishment that he's taken. So I'll kick it to you and ask you, first off, what you thought of Lipinets and Figueroa.
Lipinets is a good fighter, but he's not a great fighter. He's had his best moments at 140 pounds. Like you mentioned, his losses at 140, or his loss at 140, was against Mikey Garcia. He has one draw, and then he has another loss against Jerron Ennis, which is at 147. So it looks like he's only lost to really, really great fighters. He himself seems to be a good, solid fighter, but he's not great. And that's the problem with Omar Figueroa. He has a style where if you're a good fighter, you can easily beat him with straight punches and consistent offense. And that's what we saw last night. And the problem is, I mean, I remember going back into back in the day, 2013, 2012, when he was fighting on Showtime back then, and seeing videos of his dad saying, "Hey, I always taught my son to have a style that would be exciting." But that style isn't conducive to a long career, nor even conducive to victories in important fights. And that's why he has lost a lot of his important fights. And then there's also the fact that at 135, he was able to use his size advantage. The one fight I remember covering ringside for Omar Figueroa was against Jerry Belmontes for the WBC lightweight championship. And even then, at 135 pounds, with a guy who's probably not that powerful, but a very slick boxer, a lot of people felt that perhaps Jerry could have gotten the edge, could have gotten the win in that fight. And this is at 135. And then he went up to fight Yordynis Ugas at 147. Just by looking at the announcement, I thought this can't be good because Ugas right. has a very decorated style. He's much bigger. And Omar Figueroa used to have trouble at 135. You know, he sometimes was barely winning those fights. But again, it goes back to the fact that he was never really taught how to have defense, how to throw straight punches. It's this awkward style of, squaring up, switching stances, and pretty much eating every single shot that comes your way. So I think that the problem there wasn't the fact that this was a difficult matchup, which it was, but it's the fact that he has bad habits that he's been having since he started his career. And so moving forward, if I remember correctly, he announced his retirement. I think that's a good decision to make. You don't want to continue taking that kind of brain damage into the future. With Lipinets, he might have earned himself another big payday fight or another big fight. The Mikey Garcia fight was big. The Jerron Ennis fight was big. I'm sure he got paid good money because those guys were on the rise. Mikey was coming back. He was becoming four division champion. Jerron Ennis, of course, that's an investment. If you're his promoter, you pay the opponent a good money so that your fighter can look good. So maybe he earned himself another big payday and can fight some of the top guys at 140 pounds.
Definitely. Yeah. I'd love to see Lipinets in again, and he is a good, solid fighter at 140, and who knows, could make some noise as well. But also I think Brandon Figueroa, who we've seen as of late, had a real close and competitive fight against Stephen Fulton. He uses a similar style to his brother Omar, but I think he can learn from Omar to be a little bit more defensively sound. And also when you look at the type of career that you want to have, longevity, be more defensively sound. And, obviously he's going to give fans exciting fights, but there's only so many fights that you could fight in that style. And sometimes, like against Fulton, you're going to lose those fights, but they're pretty grueling, brutal fights. And so I think he's a little bit more refined just right off the bat, right out the box. He's a little bit younger, so I think he's still got time to learn that, hey, I can do things a little bit different. But even in his last fight, where he did get the stoppage victory, he's getting hit a lot or taking three to give one, you know, because he feels like he can overwhelm somebody.
The great Argentine trainer Amilcar Brusa used to say, golpes que entran no salen. The punches that land stay with you for the rest of your life. You know what I mean? It's like one of those energy level bars when you're playing video games like Mortal Kombat that keeps going down every time you get hit. You can see that. But in terms of someone's career, all the times you get hit lowers your longevity.
Definitely. Yeah. And again, another hat tip to Omar Figueroa. Thank you for all of the wars and the great fights. Shout out to him. And hopefully, you know, he discussed his mental health struggles and things like that before the fight. So hopefully things go well for him and he finds a good spot in his future. Lastly, we had an ESPN top ranked card headlined by Emmanuel Navarrete taking on Eduardo Baez. Obviously, Baez has been in a lot of exciting fights, so we kind of knew that he'd come to fight. Navarrete is a guy that's herky-jerky, awkward, powerful, always must-see TV, always exciting to watch. And what was possibly maybe interesting or what people didn't expect, and maybe because Tim Bradley kept on hammering home, Baez isn't going to, you know, he's going to learn that there's levels to this. He wasn't giving Baez a chance. So maybe if you hadn't seen Baez before, you thought, okay, this guy's going to get steamrolled. But no, he came out to fight. And early on, Navarrete was having trouble. Before he was stopped, Baez was ahead on two of the three scorecards. And so, you know, Navarrete, again, he's got similar to what we were talking about with Figueroa and some of these other guys. He's got a lot of outside of the ring, maybe asterisks and issues where he blows up in weight and just the lifestyle. He's not living like maybe the cleanest or healthiest lifestyle to be on weight all the time or always prepared to fight. He had been out of the ring for a while as well. And so maybe little by little, Andre Ward spoke to this. Eventually, you're going to see that one guy that's able to take advantage and put it all together to defeat him. And it may be Navarrete defeating himself more so than, you know, whoever he's facing, but a combination maybe of things. But, you know, it looked like maybe at points this was going to be the night last night, and Baez was going to be the guy. But to his credit, Navarrete, again, awkward style, but brought it all together. And he said, even though I don't throw it the best or the prettiest, man, he hit him with that Mexican liver shot. And, you know, good fight. Yeah, good fight, good night. It was just a beautiful shot. And I think Bernardo Osuna might have been the one to mention this before, but he's like, this is my favorite type of he says, this is my favorite type of knockout, because you hit a guy in the body and then it takes like those 2 or 3 seconds and then you see them wince and just welt. And it's just the effects of that punch where your body just goes numb. You can't move. This exactly happened with Baez. And it was just a beautiful shot. But I want to ask you, Gabe, you were there ringside. What you thought of Navarrete, his performance, and then potentially what is in the future? Because a lot of what's been talked about is it's time for him to move up, look for a marquee fight. And that guy may be Shakur Stevenson.
Emmanuel Navarrete, very solid fighter, exciting fighter at 126 pounds. Really one of my favorite ones right now, because of the Mexican heritage, his style, and he can really give a tough fight to anybody in and around his division. However, he was dealing with some promotional issues ahead of this fight, which is why he had a 10-month layoff, because before that, and he'll say it himself, there was a point where he made 5 defenses of his title within 11 months. So he's usually more active, which means that he's usually always cutting weight and getting into shape. So now that he was coming off 10 months of inactivity, it was a factor, the fact that he was away from so long, that he's not having to cut weight during such a long period. He admitted that he struggled to make 126 pounds for the fight. And you saw that at the weigh-in as well. So I think that was a big factor in his performance, because he did look a little sluggish in the earlier rounds, trying to find his rhythm, trying to warm up. Sometimes when you lose weight like that, it does leave you sluggish and feeling very slow. But as soon as he got his rhythm, as soon as he got warmed up in round 6, like you said, he landed the left hook to the body. And like you said, it's a delay when you get hit with the hook to the body. Your body says, I'm going to head out, like the SpongeBob meme. And then it's over. You can't do anything about it. I didn't think that Baez was going to win because of the style. I known him and his brothers from before, and I think that you need a different style to fight against Manuel Navarrete, because he takes advantage of people who come forward, whether it's, you know, by landing uppercuts, straight shots, or whatever. If you come forward in a reckless manner, Navarrete will take advantage, and that's what happened in his fight last night. So a good performance, but because of all those factors outside of the ring, took him a while to get into his rhythm and find and demonstrate that he is levels above someone like Eduardo Baez. Now, moving forward, this is a new era in his career, as he's mentioned, working with Top Rank. So he's looking forward to seeing what kind of matchups can be made in the future. In the post-fight interviews with the media, he was talking to certain reporters about potential matchups. One of them was Shakur Stevenson. He said he's open to it. Oscar Valdez also open to it. They also asked him, which one do you think would be more exciting? And he said, look, I think the Oscar Valdez fight would be more exciting because of the style. You know what I mean? The kind of style that we both bring, we both are going to come forward. And then another name is Rey Vargas, again, because of the style, because they're both Mexican. But Navarrete did admit that because, you know, they're political divisions. I mean, he put in those words, but he just said, look, I don't think it's not that probable that we're going to be able to make a fight with Rey Vargas. So I think guys like Valdez and Stevenson, those are potential big fights in the future. I don't think they're immediately next, but those are the guys that he could be fighting, you know, in a year or two from now.
Yeah, and to be fair to Navarrete, it's unfortunate, but it's just a harsh reality that the political divisions are going to, you know, rob fans of certain fights. And Ray Vargas said it after they won the title against Maxayo. They're like, look, we got to stay true and, I guess, reward the promoter that's given us the opportunity. And so they're like, we're going to stay within the PBC and, you know, that banner. So unfortunately, that would be a fun fight, though, but it's just probably not going to happen. And so you do have that inter-Mexican kind of fight that would be exciting, two action-packed guys in Valdez and Navarrete. And who's signing up to face Shakur Stevenson? Nobody. We've talked about that before. I mean, everyone that's like got titles and whatnot, like, chill. You don't want that smoke.
Yeah, no, it would suck if you're a fighter and you're at 130 pounds because you got a guy like Shakur Stevenson and it's very tough to beat him. I'd rather... you offer me a title shot, just I'll fight on the undercard.
Right. I'll fight for the NABO third
I'll take
level.
That. Yeah.
Give me I'll that all that. Day instead of yeah. fighting Shakur Stevenson.
Wait for Shakur to move up to 135.
Right. Because, you know, that's coming eventually, too. And there's obviously mouthwatering, you know, potential fights for him as he moves up, too. So that might be the best idea.
Thank you for listening to the RBR Recap. Make sure to follow us on social media at RBR Recap and visit RBRRecap.com for the latest episodes.